Welcome to this deep dive. Today, we're pointing our lens at a really fascinating theoretical paper by Per Lindholm.
Yeah, it's a great one.
And it constructs this rather terrifying but, rigorously modeled astrophysical scenario. We are pulling from sources centered around CCT, that's causality collapse thermodynamics, and something called the Paradox-Lang framework.
Right, which is quite a mouthful, but we'll break it down.
Exactly. Our mission here is to understand what happens to an otherwise perfect, perfectly habitable planet if it happens to share its orbit with a primordial black hole.
A very specific, very tiny black hole.
Right. So I want you to imagine lying on a beach on this hypothetical planet. You've got your eyes closed, soaked up the sun, just waiting for that familiar, life-giving warmth.
Sounds nice so far.
Yeah. But the energy hitting your skin feels fundamentally wrong.
Oh, yeah.
It's an angry heat, a stream of completely unstructured energy that, rather than warming your cells, actively begins, erasing your biological definitions right at the molecular level.
Okay, let's unpack this because, it completely subverts our standard planetary models, right?
Totally.
We usually assume that if a planet sits in the habitable zone and receives, the right wattage of energy, life just finds a way.
The whole Goldilocks zone thing.
Exactly. But Lindholm's application of the CCT and Paradox-Lang frameworks forces us to look not just at the quantity of the energy bombarding a planet, but the structural integrity of that energy, or really the lack thereof.
Right, the quality of the light itself. And because the term black hole immediately conjures up images of supermassive singularities at the centers of galaxies.
Yeah, tearing stars apart, massive accretion disks, the whole sci-fi movie visual.
Yeah, but the scenario modeled here is entirely different. We are looking at a primordial black hole, or a PBH, with a mass of 10 to the 15th kilograms.
To put that mass in perspective, we're talking about an object roughly the weight of a large asteroid.
Okay. An asteroid.
Yeah. But because it's a singularity, that entire mass is condensed into this submicroscopic point.
Mind-blowing.
It is. And the thermodynamics of black holes dictate that the smaller they are, the hotter they burn. So the source establishes this specific PDH has a Hawking temperature of 1.2 times 10 to the 5th Kelvin.
So around 120,000 Kelvin.
Exactly.
And the orbital mechanics model in the paper place this object in inner orbit, just 0.01 astronomical units from the habitable planet.
It is parked right next door.
Literally right there.
Yeah.
And the raw energy flux, the power hitting the planet's atmosphere from this tiny point, is about 1,361 watts per square meter.
Which is an important number.
It is, because that is nearly identical to the solar constant we receive from our own sun. So you have a primary star providing normal daylight, and sharing that sky is this invisible planet-sized X-ray machine.
Invisible because of where that 120,000 Kelvin temperature places its emission peak.
Right.
Like stellar fusion peaks, invisible light, which gives us the colors of our daylight.
Makes sense.
But this PBH peaks in extreme ultraviolet and soft X-rays. You wouldn't even see it with the naked eye. But it's dumping an equivalent amount of raw power onto the biosphere.
So the obvious hurdle here is stability, right? If you introduce a black hole into the inner solar system, I think the initial assumption is that orbital decay or tidal forces would eventually lead to it, consuming the planet.
Or destabilizing the entire system, yeah.
But the models in the text show that an asteroid mass PBH captured early in stellar formation can actually settle into a stable resonance.
Yeah, it doesn't have the gravitational reach to shred a planet from 0.01 AU away. It just sits there contributing a very marginal amount of gravity and a completely lethal amount of ionizing radiation.
And that stability is what makes this scenario so insidious, right?
Absolutely. Because it allows enough time for a planetary biosphere to theoretically form.
Right.
Which really sets the stage for the core conflict of this whole paper. The interaction between biological evolution and this constant unyielding barrage of Hawking radiation.
Yeah. And to understand that interaction, we have to transition away from standard astrophysics and look at the thermodynamics of this this angry heat.
Yes. The CCT angle.
Right. The sources lean heavily on Paradox-Lang, which is this formal language framework used to model physical systems as mathematical definitions, constrained by thermodynamics.
It's a really unique way to look at it.
It is.
Yeah.
In this framework, physical matter isn't just stuff. It's a continuous assertion of a mathematical definition. And maintaining that definition requires a constant payment of energy.
What's fascinating here is how the Paradox-Lang framework contrasts the two energy sources in our scenario.
Okay.
Stellar radiation from the primary star, It's generated by highly structured nuclear fusion.
Right.
It has distinct spectral lines, a clear temperature gradient, and most importantly, it allows biological systems to extract work from it. It's coherent energy.
So it basically pays the thermodynamic bills for the planet's biological definitions.
Exactly. It funds the system. But the black hole acts as the ultimate definitional dead end. The Hawking radiation it emits is perfectly incoherent. It contains absolutely zero spatial or temporal correlations.
Wow.
Yeah. It is a completely unstructured, definitionless stream of thermal agitation.
And that lack of structure is really the defining weapon of the PBH here. Like, when structured energy hits a biological system, say a plant leaf, the system can channel that energy through complex enzymatic pathways.
It uses it.
Right. But when Hawking radiation hits that same system, it can't be channeled. It just adds violent thermal noise, breaking covalent bonds, and, you know, actively dismantling the mathematical definitions of the cells.
Yes. It's just pure destruction at a molecular level.
Well, wait, I need to push back on the mechanics of that unstructured energy for a second, based on the paradox Lang tables in the supplementary notes.
Sure.
Because there's a specific metric regarding the entropy of these photons that seems, I don't know, counterintuitive to me.
I think I know what you're going to bring up.
Yeah. The text states that the Hawking photons from this PBH actually carry an entropy of about 1.1 times 10 to the negative 5th Kelvin inverse per unit of energy.
Right.
But the solar photons from the primary star carry a higher entropy, about 2.3 times 10 to the negative 4th. So if the black hole's radiation has a lower entropy per unit of energy, the math kind of implies it should be more ordered, not less. So why does the paper treat it as pure chaos?
It's a really good question, and it's a super common point of friction when looking at these specific tables.
Okay, good. It's not just me.
Definitely not. The resolution lies in the concept of maximum entropy states versus the capacity to do work.
Okay, explain that.
So while the numerical value of entropy per photon might be lower, and that's due to the extreme energy of X-ray emissions, the Hawking radiation is perfectly thermal,
right?
Meaning for its specific emission temperature, it is already at a state of maximum entropy.
Oh, meaning there's no gradient available.
Exactly. It's exactly the opposite of stellar radiation, which arrives at the planet having this massive temperature gradient relative to the cold environment of space.
And that gradient is what allows life to exploit the difference and perform work.
Yes. Because the Hawking flux is a maximum entropy state for its temperature profile, it offers no usable gradient. I like to think of it as the thermodynamic equivalent of a bulldozer.
A bulldozer, I like that.
Right. It possesses massive energy, but you cannot plug a delicate biological machine into it. Its only function is to disrupt the existing order of whatever system it impacts.
And that disruption takes us directly into the cellular biology of the organisms trying to survive in this environment.
Yeah, the real ground level effects.
The paper refers to it as the metabolic tax of staying defined.
A hefty tax, too.
Oh, for sure.
Oh.
If we view a living cell through the paradox-Lang framework, it's basically this incredibly dense library of genetic and epigenetic definitions, right?
Exactly. You have transcription factor binding sites, DNA methylation marks, histone modifications.
All the instructions.
Yeah. All of these are precise mathematical boundaries that tell a biological system how to function, when to divide, and what proteins to fold.
And keeping those boundaries intact is bound by Landauer's principle.
Right.
So the source uses Landauer's principle, which, for those who don't know, states that erasing a single bit of information in a thermal environment requires a minimum energy expenditure. It uses that to calculate the cost of this Hawking bombardment.
Yes. And the radiation artificially elevates the effective noise temperature of the whole planetary environment.
So every high-energy photon penetrating the cell has a statistical probability of forcing an erasure event.
It flips a bit of the genetic code.
And the downstream effect of that environmental noise is just catastrophic.
Yeah.
The baseline mutation rate for a standard biological cell might hover around, what, 10 to the negative 8th?
Yep, somewhere around there.
But under the continuous flux of this microscopic black hole, that mutation rate spikes to 10 to the negative 6th.
Which is a huge jump.
It's huge. And here's where it gets really interesting, because the cell can't simply ignore a mutation rate that high. It has to dedicate its resources to fixing the errors.
It has no choice.
Right. It's analogous to trying to write a complex, highly detailed novel, but an invisible entity is standing over your shoulder, hitting the backspace key at random intervals.
That sounds like a nightmare.
Right. All the creative energy you would normally use to advance the plot or, you know, to build narrative complexity, or in the cell's case, to grow and evolve, It's entirely consumed by the desperate need to just retype the deleted words.
You're trapped in an endless loop of proofreading.
Yes.
The biological organism is forced to divert its finite ATP, its cellular energy currency, away from regular metabolic function and pour it all into constant DNA repair and protein degradation pathways.
Just to tread water.
Exactly. This is the physical manifestation of that angry heat we talked about.
It's so wild because it frames the physical sensation of the environment not as like burning, but is this profound systemic exhaustion?
Yeah.
Your biology is fighting a second-by-second battle against pure entropy just to maintain its current state. There is absolutely no surplus energy left for higher-order evolution.
And, you know, biological repair mechanisms have limits.
Right.
Even if a cell dedicates its maximum metabolic bandwidth to repairing double-strand DNA breaks or reestablishing erase epigenetic marks, the sheer volume of the Hawking flux ensures that eventually critical definitions will be lost permanently.
Which triggers the planetary struggle outlined in the final sections of the paper. Because when the repair system is finally overwhelmed, the result isn't just simple cell death.
No, it's much worse.
In the CCT framework, it leads to what Lindholm terms a definition collapse catastrophe.
Which we typically call cancer.
Right. But reading the thermodynamic breakdown of oncology in this paper was, honestly, it was jarring.
Oh, it completely reframes how you look at it. Standard medical models view cancer as a localized disease of genetic mutation, right?
Yeah.
But the paradox-Lang framework redefines a healthy cell as a stable limit cycle. It's a system that maintains its self-consistent boundaries through a continuous, balanced flow of energy. So when the Hawking radiation saturates the defenses and erases the regulatory definitions, that limit cycle just collapses.
So the cell loses contact inhibition. It forgets the mathematical boundary of where it ends and its neighboring tissue begins.
Exactly. It ceases to participate in the cooperative structure of the organism.
Wow.
The paper actually describes the resulting malignant cell as a localized thermodynamic sink.
A sink?
Yeah. It begins to absorb the host's metabolic energy and export pure entropy, just proliferating without any functional purpose. It essentially mimics the behavior of the black hole itself, but on a microscopic scale within the host organism.
That is deeply unsettling.
Right.
And the dosage metrics for this collapse are incredibly grim. Like, an unshielded biosphere located 0.01 AU from this specific PBH would be subjected to a flux of 10 to the 6th watts per square meter.
Which is massive.
Yeah, that translates to an exposure of 10 to the 7th gray of radiation per day. That level of extreme ultraviolet and soft X-ray bombardment is straight up sterilizing.
Nothing complex survives that. Nothing.
But the author also models mitigated scenarios, right? Like, what if the planet has a phenomenally thick atmosphere?
Yeah.
Or maybe deep subsurface oceans, bringing the exposure down to a heavily attenuated sublethal chronic dose?
Yeah, in those cases, we're looking at maybe 0.1 to 1 gray per year reaching the biological layer.
Which still isn't great.
No, it's not. The models show that even at a fraction of a gray annually, the lifetime cancer risk for the biosphere elevates by several percent.
Wow.
So for a microbe with a lifespan of a few days, that might be survivable through rapid reproduction.
Right? Is outbreeding the mutation rate.
Exactly. But for any large, complex, slow reproducing organism, anything requiring a massive neural network or a long gestation period, it represents this insurmountable biological wall.
The metabolic tax of definition erasure basically guarantees that complex species will succumb to definition collapse long before they can establish, say, a technologically advanced civilization.
Yeah. And if we connect this to the bigger picture, this theoretical model provides a highly specific observational target for astrophysicists.
Oh, right, the observation part.
Yeah. Lindholm suggests that next-generation X-ray observatories, such as the proposed Athena or Lynx missions, they could actually detect these systems.
Which is crazy because, given the microscopic size of the black hole, direct imaging is obviously impossible.
Oh, yeah, completely.
But the text notes, they would look for the thermodynamic shadow. Astronomers would scan for a faint, purely thermal X-ray point source, completely lacking the spectral absorption lines you'd normally expect from a star.
Exactly.
And if they locate that thermal signature co-orbiting with an exoplanet, they would then analyze the exoplanet's atmosphere for anomalous, hyper-elevated ionization levels driven by the Hawking flux.
And identifying these systems really bridges the gap between theoretical thermodynamics and one of the most enduring mysteries in astronomy, which is the Fermi paradox.
Right. The utter silence of the universe in the face of billions of potentially habitable exoplanets. Where is everybody?
Exactly. the paper positions the primordial black hole as a novel anthropic filter, or a great filter candidate.
Great, this part was fascinating.
Because current cosmological models regarding dark matter suggest that PBHs of this specific asteroid mass range could be incredibly abundant, just scattered throughout the galaxy.
Yeah.
If they make up even a fraction of the dark matter halo, it becomes a statistical inevitability that a significant percentage of otherwise perfect, completely habitable planetary systems are contaminated.
So they possess liquid water, optimal planetary mass, ideal distance from a stable primary star. By all our current observational metrics, they are prime candidates for complex life.
Yep.
Yet they are fundamentally hostile to information storage.
They are silent death traps.
It's chilling. The Hawking flood acts as an invisible ceiling on complexity. It leaves no obvious fossil record, no shredded planetary debris, just a biosphere forever locked into rudimentary radiation-resistant microbes, unable to pay that metabolic tax required to evolve a brain.
It implies that complex life isn't rare because water or carbon is rare. Complex life is rare because planetary systems entirely devoid of these microscopic thermodynamic wrecking balls are the exception, not the rule.
Wow. And the author refers to our own solar system as a definitional oasis.
Yes.
Our existence, our capacity to maintain the massive informational architecture of human DNA without collapsing into thermodynamic sinks, it's heavily reliant on the sheer luck of occupying a quiet pocket of space.
It really puts things in perspective.
It does. So what does this all mean? We have followed Lindholm's CCT framework from the orbital mechanics of an asteroid mass black hole down to the molecular cost of erasing a single bit of genetic information.
Yeah, it's quite a journey.
We've looked at cancer not just as a disease, but as a limit cycle collapse, and scale that metabolic tax all the way up to a potential solution for the Fermi paradox.
It demonstrates that the prerequisites for life go far beyond the mere presence of energy and chemical building blocks. The universe is governed by the structural integrity of information and the thermodynamics of maintaining it.
And, you know, it leaves me with a thought regarding our own future that isn't explicitly covered in the text, but it feels like the inevitable next question.
Okay, let's hear it.
If this framework proves that biology is uniquely vulnerable to the unstructured chaos of angry heat, what does that mean for our technology?
Oh, that's an interesting angle.
Right. We constantly theorize about sending artificial probes, like von Neumann machines or artificial general intelligence, out across the galaxy to explore these distant stars.
Sure.
But our machines rely on mathematical definitions just as much as our DNA does. Silicon pathways and quantum states are just as susceptible to Landauer's principle and bit flipping as a biological cell.
They really are.
So if primordial black holes are as ubiquitous as the dark matter models suggest, they might not just be a great filter for biological evolution. They might represent literal physical no-go zones for any advanced civilization trying to traverse the stars.
Wow.
The cosmic static might wipe our hard drives just as violently as it dismantles a genome, permanently walling off massive sections of the galaxy from exploration.
A universe where the map is permanently fragmented by invisible zones of absolute erasure, that is a terrifying thought.
It really is. So the next time you step outside and feel the warmth of the sun on your face, take a moment to appreciate the beautiful, highly structured, low-entropy nature of that light. The sheer luxury of living in a solar system where the energy raining down from the sky allows you to remain defined.